be here with our allies in the fight for affordable health care.
I'm Andy Seaton, KBOO News.
For KBOO in Portland, I'm Julie Sabatier.
KBOO's Afifa Amin Shafi reports.
I'm Stephanie Potter, KBOO News.
KBOO's Eduardo de Landeros Tiede has more.
I'm Annalisa Hummel.
And I'm Liam Gelda.
This is Maddie Bowden.
I'm Alex Collins, KBOO News.
I'm Michael Newman, KBOO News.
I'm Courtney Dillard, KBOO News.
Coming up on a KBOO Evening News, OSU students are partnering with Engineers Without Borders to offer clean water to El Salvador citizens.
Robert Novak reports in a Washington Post column today that some GOP leadership members encouraged Foley to run for re-election after the email scandal broke.
And an influential London newspaper has reported that three African nations are fighting a proxy war in Somalia.
And in the human cost of occupation in Iraq, as of today, there have been 2,733 officially acknowledged deaths of American soldiers. IraqBodyCount.org reports that as many as 48,343 civilians have been reported killed by military intervention in Iraq. Website InformationClearinghouse.info reports the true civilian casualty rate may be as high as a 250,000 dead.
KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 4, 2006, 34 days before the midterm elections. I'm Noah Eaton.
And I'm Brian Pritchett. We'd like to remind you that we're in the midst of the KBOO Community Fall Membership Drive, and we're asking for your continued support. Please make a pledge by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO.
The co-sponsors of the salvage logging bill are Republican Representatives Greg Walden of Oregon and Democratic Representative Brian Bard of Washington State. They call it a common-sense plan and say that it will be good for the environment and the economy. They cite the Biscuit Fire as a prime example of the need for the legislation. But environmental groups and a majority of House Democrats oppose the bill. They argue that cutting large old trees and planting new ones makes forests more available to new fires and less valuable as habitat for fish and wildlife. They say it is better to allow forests to come back on their own. The Biscuit Fire burned about 500,000 acres in Oregon and California in 2002, making it the largest wildfire in the continental United States since 1997.
A soldier from Portland has died in Iraq. It happened when an improvised explosive device detonated near his vehicle. Chase Haig was 22. Haig was killed on Sunday. One teacher from Park Rose High School, where Haig graduated 4 years ago, says students looked up to Haig. Teachers say he exhibited uncommon leadership. While proponents of the salvage logging bill say that it's good for business, a new report shows that the government is losing money on the deal. The federal government spent nearly $11 million to salvage timber from an Oregon wildfire in 2002. The report shows that it got less than $9 million from selling wood that was saved. The report also said that post-fire logging activities generally were not delayed by lawsuits, contrary to claims by the Bush administration and its Republican allies in Congress. The report says instead that the complexity of environmental laws plus the administration decision to change its plans to dramatically increase logging were responsible for the delays.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and a special event tomorrow in Pioneer Courthouse Square highlights an important political issue linked to breast cancer and women's health. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke about it earlier today with Dr. Elizabeth Steiner, Associate Director of the Oregon Health and Science University Cancer Institute Breast Health Education Program.
I'm Lisa Loving, KBOO Evening News. We're speaking with Dr. Elizabeth Steiner of the OHSU Breast Cancer Center. Elizabeth, there's a big event going on tomorrow. What's happening tomorrow?
Tomorrow we're having a rally, Lisa, at Pioneer Courthouse Square at noon to rally for increased federal funding for the Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program and to tell women about what a high-quality clinical breast exam is so they know what to expect from their doctors.
Elizabeth, why is this so radical? Why do you have to have a rally just for basic health care?
That's a good question. I wish we didn't have to, Lisa, but unfortunately the federal government has decided to cut millions of dollars from this important program that provides core cancer screening for women who don't have health insurance and can't afford to pay for it themselves. This program provides services for thousands and thousands of Oregon women every year, and if we lose this funding, there are a lot of women in Oregon who won't get screened for breast and cervical cancer.
So can you give us the details about the rally tomorrow?
Absolutely. There's a public health information event going on from 11 to 1:30 tomorrow at Pioneer Courthouse Square, and starting at noon, there will be speakers who will talk about the importance of early detection of breast cancer and the importance of the federal breast and cervical cancer early detection program in Oregon, and how we can all contact our federal representatives, Senator Smith, Senator Wyden, and whoever your congressperson is, to ask them to support increased funding for this program.
Elizabeth, do you feel that there are aspects of breast cancer, women with breast cancer, that maybe federal representatives don't understand? I mean, what's going on there?
I wish I knew the answer to that question. I think that one of the things that often gets lost in the shuffle around healthcare is the importance of detecting these cancers so early. Both breast and cervical cancer are completely curable if we catch them early. And it's much less expensive to catch them early than to try to treat them later. And the way people are looking at financing now, I think it's hard for them sometimes to put money up front to save money in the long term. And we're hoping to re-educate them, let them see the value of catching these problems early.
That was KBOO's Lisa Loving speaking with Dr. Elizabeth Steiner of the OHSU Cancer Institute. Tomorrow's events at Pioneer Square include an educational fair from 11 to 2:30 and a rally at noon. Find out more on the web at www.ohsucancer.org.
The current time is 5:06. You're listening to Community Radio KBOO in Portland, Vancouver, Corvallis, and Hood River. As we ask you to become a member of KBOO Community Radio, please make a pledge by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO. We take you now to Lisa Loving and David Lipton.
Hey, David.
And Lisa, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Me too. It's our first day of our fall drive. We're getting a good response from our listeners because they understand that it's only here at 90.7 FM KBOO that they're going to get this newscast that brings you information neglected by other media, should I say.
Yeah, actually, we work really hard all day long to put together this one-hour news broadcast, and we're asking people to call us up at 503-232-8818 to support this kind of programming. Actually, everyone in the news department is a volunteer except for me, and I run around like a chihuahua trying to, you know, figure out how to support everybody in this task. But, you know, we spent some time at some national conferences this year, and we found out that actually KBOO, there's almost no other station at all, community station, that does a one-hour broadcast. There's Democracy Now!, WMNF in Tampa, Florida, and there's us. And I don't know if people realize how labor-intensive it is.
It's hugely labor-intensive. I watch the news crew working as I'm sitting there doing a jazz program, and they're all over the place, and they're all volunteers. Your contributions, your KBOO membership, allows these people to put together the newscast. You facilitate their work. Your membership, by calling 503-232-8818, pays for the tape decks for them to go out and do the interviews or record the speeches, pays for the wire services into the building, pays for the equipment for them to edit their tapes and edit their stories down, pays for the resources that our volunteers need to put together these news show for you. 503-232-8818. Make a contribution, help them, help you get the information.
You know, to sort of make it a better deal for everybody all around, we've got three books that we're going to give as thank you gifts.
All right.
For people who call. You know, I really like to suggest that people give 1 hour's wage a month as their KBOO contribution. That way, if you make minimum wage, that's $7.50 an hour in the state of Oregon, $7.50 a month.
That would be close to $90, $100 in that ballpark.
It's about $8.50. It's about $90. And for that amount, we'll give you a copy of Armed Madhouse by Greg Palast, one of our favorite radical voices that appears on our airwaves and literally nowhere else, except maybe Democracy Now!. Armed Madhouse by investigative reporter Greg Palast. That's for a $90 minimum pledge. And we're asking people to dial 503-232-8818 or toll free outside the Portland area, 1-877-500-KBOO. You can also join online, kboo.fm. But this Greg Palast book is a gas. The subtitle is Who's Afraid of Osama Wolf? China Floats, Bush Sinks, The Scheme to Steal 08, No Child's Behind Left, and Other Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Class War. This is actually an incredibly hot book. Greg Palast, Armed Madhouse. That's for a $90 minimum pledge. And I'm saying to you, 1 hour's wage per month. And when you're at work and you feel frustrated and you're tired and you're burned out, I'm telling you, and I know this from experience, you can say, boom, this is my KBOO hour. I swear, it really makes it better.
It'll make you feel better because you know that that hour of work is going towards a noble cause, the cause of community radio, non-commercial radio, a radio station that values your intelligence, a radio station that tries to give you the information to help you be more effective in the world around you, gives you, tells you about rallies that are coming up down the road, tells you about things that are happening that other radio stations don't dare to mention, gives you information so that you can act responsibly and make choices
about saving the planet. You know, here's another thing. Actually, KBOO Evening News, there's a couple things that are sort of like our style. They're sort of the things that we do. And one of them is covering Cindy Sheehan and the war, okay? You know, last night, Cindy Sheehan was in Portland. One of our Bedrock News volunteers, Gail Jewell, she was in the crowd. She was attacked by a drunken anti-Cindy Sheehan person. A person who doesn't like Cindy Sheehan attacked our KBOO reporter, broke her microphone, ripped her clothes, and hit her in the head. And I know this sounds kind of a weird thing to say, but, you know, we're here on the front lines. We're really doing what matters, and people take flack for that. This is dangerous radio, and I just want to be clear. And one of the thank you gifts we're going to offer right now is Cindy Sheehan's book, Not One More Mother's Child. Of course, you know, Cindy Sheehan's son, Casey, was killed in Iraq, and Cindy Sheehan has basically made it her life's work to follow George Bush around and try to force him to meet with her, which he's refused to do.
To confront the war and confront the fact that the war is costing American lives.
That's for a $75 minimum pledge. As I said, $7.50 a month. That's not asking too much. But I know there are some people out there that make $10 an hour. There are people out there that make $25 an hour. And, you know, 1 hour's wage, it's not asking very much, even if you have one of those $8 cake shop jobs in the Pearl. And you know what, David? A lot of our KBOO News volunteers are servers in restaurants. They're house cleaners. They're students. There's people that work at Costco, people who work all day or sometimes all night, and they come in and they help put this broadcast together. This is not shiny plastic stuff. This is people like you that bring you information that you need. 503-232-8818 or toll-free 1-877-500-KBOO.
People come in to do this work because they believe in it. They believe that it's important to get this information out to the greater metro area. Portland is a wonderful place to live and is known as a very politically active place. One of the things that keeps Portland this way, that has made Portland this way, is KBOO Radio. An outlet like this allows so many voices to be heard. An outlet like this allows this kind of information to get out there and be heard. Cities that do not have community radio stations often do not get this information.
You know what, David, I have to say, Portland, Oregon is known around the nation as Little Beirut, and that was a label that was put on us by George W. Bush's father, the first President Bush. And I think that KBOO is the real reason why we have such an active activist community.
Help us out. 503-232-8818. If you're across the river in Vancouver, up the gorge, down the valley, it's toll-free 1-877-500-5266. I know some of you listen online because you're not going to get this information elsewhere. If you're listening online at www.kboo.fm, you can join online or call us toll-free. We've got lots more news for you coming up right about now.
It's true, and we're going to go back to the news, but you can call us or stop by in person to 20 Southeast 8th. You can call us even if we're not asking you to in that beautiful moment, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. And now we're going back to the news. Noah, Brian, back to you.
Representative Greg Walden, an Oregon Republican representing the 2nd District of Oregon, called the actions of a former Florida congressman who emailed sexually explicit messages to teenage pages repulsive, but said he continues to support Speaker Dennis Hastert. Walden's staff, when asked this morning whether a congressman supports calls for Hastert to step down, replied that a written statement released Tuesday was all Walden had to say on the topic. The Washington Times, considered a conservative newspaper, called for Hastert to resign this week. Walden, however, says he strongly supports Hastert, and the speaker's call for an immediate and thorough investigation by federal and Florida law enforcement into the conduct of former Representative Mark Foley, not a Democrat like Fox News would try to make you think.
Two women involved in an arson at the University of Washington have pleaded guilty to felony charges. The plea deals could drastically reduce the prison time faced by 33-year-old Jennifer Kolar and 31-year-old Lacey Philibaum. The two Washington State women are among five people named by federal authorities in the 2001 firebombing at the university. The fire targeted research on hybrid poplar trees and caused $7 million in damage. A radical environmental group, the Earth Liberation Front, claimed responsibility at the time. Prosecutors will now recommend 5 to 7 years in prison for Kolar of Seattle. Philibaum of Spokane faces a recommended 3 to 5 year sentence. Sentencing is scheduled for January in federal court in Tacoma.
17 anti-war protesters charged with trespassing at the Port of Olympia will be able to use the necessary defense at their trial next month. A Thurston County District Court judge, Susan Dubison, ruled that they can argue their conduct was necessary to prevent the greater harm of the killing occurring in Iraq. The defendants must prove to the jury that their conduct was no greater harm than they were attempting to prevent, and they had no legal alternative. But Deputy Prosecutor Deborah Urich says it's rare for a court to allow the necessity defense. The protest occurred over several days in late May after a Navy ship arrived at the Port of Olympia to take Fort Lewis equipment to Iraq. If convicted of misdemeanor trespassing, the defendants would face up to 90 days in jail.
Oregon nurses, longshoremen, construction workers, and labor leaders are joining together today in Portland to protest what they're calling a blow to workers everywhere. The National Labor Relations Board ruled yesterday to change longtime federal labor laws, effectively excluding millions of workers from overtime and union eligibility. KBOO's Martha Odom has the story.
Oregon workers are gathering in Portland today to protest what they're calling one of the most serious attacks on worker rights in decades. In a 3-2 vote along party lines, the Republican majority on the National Labor Relations Board voted to expand the definition of supervisor, effectively stripping millions of workers from overtime pay, protection, and the right to join a union. Tens of thousands of workers in Oregon could be affected. Tom Chamberlain of the Oregon AFL-CIO says the so-called Kentucky River decision hurts not just these employees, but the entire workforce.
Union workers, the contracts, the benefits that they negotiate, had an impact on our non-union workforce. To maintain their competitiveness, non-union shops have to maintain competitive wages, health care, and retirements.
An attorney for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce said the new and expanded definition is reasonable, clear, and won't impact as many people as expected. Estimates range somewhere around 8 million people, according to the Economic Policy Institute. In a dissenting vote, the two Democrats argued that the expanded definition creates a new class of workers without managers' benefits or workers' rights. Nurse Kim Hubbard said it's a serious blow for nursing staff who rely on strong union support when they feel the need to stand up for better patient care, whether with hospitals or with doctors.
This is the Labor Board's position to try to take the most skilled and the most experienced workers out of unions to weaken the strength of unions. It can have very serious consequences in health care.
Contents are provided by the Oregon News Service. I'm Martha Odom, KBOO News.
Students from the Oregon State University chapter of Engineers Without Borders are working to bring clean water to two isolated villages in El Salvador. The El Salvador Ministry of Health has designated these villages to be of grave concern due to the prevalence of undernourished children. Undernourishment is often a symptom of waterborne diarrheal diseases. Last March, a team of three OSU students and an engineer who works for the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality traveled to the area, evaluated the overall health, and established context for project implementation. A second group of five students and two engineers recently returned from a mid-September trip, during which they performed a detailed assessment of the degree and type of water contamination and the viable treatment options.
A handful of Oregon nonprofit and government groups are partnering in an effort to improve the quality of care in the state's nursing homes. The voluntary campaign targets 8 measurable clinical quality and organizational improvement goals that nursing homes can work on to improve their quality of care. The campaign will move to establish local area networks for excellence in states, consisting of organizations qualified to promote and support the effort. Organizers say the effort is different from existing national quality initiatives because it encourages consumer involvement as an important component to achieving success.
An Indian scripture that has been at the University of Washington's Burke Museum for a century is being returned to its British Columbia tribe. According to the lore of the Chilliwack tribe, The four-foot granite face is believed to be the medicine man Tilwilatsa, who was turned to stone thousands of years ago. The museum will turn over the sculpture at a Friday ceremony with the Nooksack tribe. But Nooksacks will return it to the Chilliwacks later this month, and it will be housed at tribal headquarters in Chilliwack, British Columbia. It was taken from the tribe in 1892 and displaced for a time at a dime store museum. It was donated to the Seattle Museum in 1904. But Chilliwacks enlisted their cultural cousins, the Nooksacks, to claim the stone under the Native American Graves Reparation Act.
And now, time for another fine edition of KBOO's homegrown environmental series, Our Backyard, produced and hosted by our good friend, Edison Carter.
Welcome to Our Backyard, locally produced reports and commentary about issues affecting food, water, and air quality in our backyard. This edition, a review of several of Our Backyard reports recently reported here over the last 6 months, with updates. I'd like to report that in every instance where the environment is being threatened or actually being damaged, corrections have been made, pollution has been reduced, or plans at least are being drawn up, and that every candidate for public office gets it about the environment. But unhappily, that's not the reality. The pesticide levels in our rivers and streams under Oregon's currently weak pesticide use reporting program remain unchanged. The way it stands now, if any pesticides at all are detected, there is little chance of actually discovering the source of that contamination. And that's because last year, pesticide industry lobbyists made sure the reporting process was written vaguely enough to shield any polluter from easy identification. This current reporting system is a farce and an insult not only to the planet, but to our intelligence. On the other hand, there's reason for some optimism on the water murkiness issue. This summer, the DEQ announced it will now review the water turbidity standards it had previously promoted just a few months before at the behest of a powerful group of industrial pollution dischargers as an improved and, most importantly, more business-friendly regulation. The industry responsible for most of this pollution actually paid for the DEQ study with the understanding that the new standards would be weaker. That kind of coziness between government regulators and the industry it's supposed to regulate simply doesn't pass the smell test. But after Columbia and Willamette Riverkeepers, the scientific community and citizens like you and me justifiably protested, DEQ backed off this embarrassing revision and agreed to conduct a new study, this time using independent researchers to review the current standards on just how much pollution an industry can spew into our streams and rivers. And then there's the National Uniformity Food Act, sponsored by the industrial food products industry. If this bill becomes law, it will prevent us from ever knowing what's in our food. Although it passed in the U.S. House and now sits awaiting Senate action, we still have time to stop this dreadful legislation. Interestingly, the recent spinach contamination incidents may actually help stop this bill from ever seeing the light of day, since the issue of food safety has finally occurred to the mainstream media and even some politicians. This bill is a perfect example of how to keep the consumer uninformed while allowing food producers to use whatever ingredients they choose and will do absolutely nothing to improve the safety of our food supply. People have a right to know how their food is produced and what's in it. The new agrarians and locavores' elegant notion about eating locally and knowing who produces our food resonates perfectly within this issue. And county rural schools that used to rely on local timber revenues for support have watched in alarm since 2001 as the Bush administration has continually tried to eliminate this essential funding safety net for these counties as they make the slow transition away from a timber-based economy. To date, the best idea the Bushies have been able to come up with is to fund this program by selling off chunks of national forest to their land developer friends. And even that brilliant answer will only partially fund the program. Frankly, this is an unacceptable and contemptuous solution to a problem that requires a bipartisan effort, something this current crowd doesn't seem to be able to grasp. The 2007 Farm Bill, like all farm legislation, has a huge influence in our backyard. If, however, this version mirrors the current Farm Bill that's about to expire, then only big corporate agribusiness will benefit, while small family farms and ranches, especially those who follow organic and earth-friendly growing practices, will be left out again. And Oregon Fish and Wildlife's plan to kill cougars is alive and well and proceeding. A report just this past week says efforts are already underway in northeast Oregon that will eventually lead to hired federal hunters reducing the cougar population based on flawed science and what I can only speculate must be someone's small-minded perception that this planet simply isn't big enough for any critters except the two-legged kind, especially if, as in this case, the four-legged critter isn't completely defenseless, like an owl or a fish. And finally, a look at the candidates for governor and U.S. Congress through an environmental and social justice lens revealed that while most of the incumbents support at least a few of the more pressing issues, none can truly be called environmental champions. Some final thoughts. A common thread in virtually every story is that no matter how far away an event or new discovery takes place, it can have an effect right here in our backyard. Thinking globally without considering local implications is simply wrong-headed. So as we approach what may be the most single important election in our country's short history, it is essential that you do one thing, and that's vote. There's still time to register, so do it now. And in the meantime, keep listening to KBOO News and Public Affairs, and stay informed. After all, this is our backyard.
The current time is 5:25. Still to come on the KBOO Evening News, a senior congressional aide has revealed today that House Speaker Dennis Hastert was told of Foley's misconduct 2 years ago. Hear about the major achievements student groups have made in hoping to resolve the Darfur humanitarian crisis, and hear why the mayor's mansion of Alameda, California may soon be headed under the big top. You're listening to the community radio KBOO in Portland, Vancouver, Corvallis, and Hood River.
And once again, we ask you to become a member of KBOO Community Radio, or renew your membership, or just call us because you care. Please make a pledge and show your support by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO. Now let's once again go to Lisa Loving and David Lipton.
And I'd like to send out a huge thank you to Timothy, Zion, and Sierra, who have all either just joined as a new member or renewed their memberships this afternoon during the news. And listeners, we have met the goal for this particular program. We're trying to raise, I believe, $240 on this particular show. We have met that goal, but wait, don't stop. You can still become a KBOO member.
I think you should.
You absolutely should. As that last program, I love that Our Backyard series. I've been listening to it and just loving it. And this is our community radio station. Our community radio station, and it stays our station because we, yes, we the listeners, we the volunteers, we the members of the community own it, pay for it, and operate it. And you become a KBOO member, a KBOO owner, by calling 503-232-8818 and saying, yes, I support community radio. I listen, and I want to be a KBOO supporter, a KBOO member. As little as $40 because there's a one-year membership to KBOO. If you can afford more, we'd love to have it. We have some beautiful T-shirts on the wall up here. One, KBOO versus the Media Zillas.
That's what Sierra got as her happy thank you gift. That shirt is really cool. It's designed by Matt Worker, who's actually a famous cartoonist, New Yorker, all kind of places he cartoons for. And famous people wear that T-shirt, actually. David Barsamian, Amy Goodman, you'll see them in documentaries and photographs wearing that T-shirt. I'm Lisa Loving. I'm the Evening News Director. David Lipton, we were chatting with him. He's this juicy jazz programmer, which is super cool. We, however, are joined by Joshua Olmsted, who started out as a member of the KBOO Youth Collective, but he's a KBOO News volunteer, and he's an anchor of the news. Joshua, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Joshua, tell us about yourself, how you got involved in KBOO. By the way, 503-232-8818 is the number to call, because we're still giving away copies of Armed Madhouse by Greg Pallas, American Methods by Christian Williams. Christian Williams is a local author, and this is a book, Torture and the Logic of Domination, Tried and True Methods of Terror and Social Control of the United States. Christian Williams already published a book about police states. So we're offering that. There's a $60 pledge. We're also offering Not One More Mother's Child by Cindy Sheehan. That's for a $75 minimum pledge. I'm suggesting people give 1 hour wage per month to KBOO. And let's go to Joshua really quick. Joshua, what made you be a KBOO volunteer?
Well, you know, I actually stopped by the station a couple of years ago because my mom was giving a pledge, and they told me about the KBOO Youth Collective, which is another one of KBOO's fine programs we got going here. And in fact, they're you know, we meet every Wednesday at 6, which is coming up pretty quick. And You know, I learned the basics of programming here with a lot of other youth, and over time, you know, I started to move into other departments of the station. Like you said, I've done news anchoring, general engineering. You know, it really, you know, cable really gets you involved, and that's what's, you know, one of the greatest things about the station.
One of the beauties of a community radio station truly is the outreach that we provide and the training that we provide for free to hundreds, thousands of people. We've had cable volunteers learn here and move on to other stations all around the country. All around the world. And they're spreading that sort of message of community radio, that message of grassroots radio, of getting stories out and stories told that would not be heard not for us.
And so we are actually already going to go back to the news in about 25 seconds.
Oh, gosh, so what's that phone number again?
503-232-8818.
Or toll-free. 1-877-500-5266.
And we want to thank all the people that already helped us meet our goal. Did we mention that we love you? So, 10 seconds. We're going to go back to Noah and Brian. And thank you for calling all the people who have called. Brian, Noah, back to you.
And we just want to say that Brian and I love you all, too. Shocking new internet messages surfaced yesterday, revealing that former Representative Mark Foley engaged in online sex with a male high school page while taking a break from an important vote on the House floor. The graphic April 2003 exchange between Foley, the disgraced former chairman of the House Missing and Exploited Children's Caucus, and the underage former House page is one of two new sets of instant messages that were obtained by ABC News and published on its website. In another stunning development, Robert Novak today reveals in his column that even after House GOP leaders knew that Foley had written an inappropriate email to a 16-year-old former Phil Page, they were still urging him to seek re-election. Novak writes, quote, "A member of the House leadership told me that Foley, under continuous political pressure because of his sexual orientation, was considering not seeking a seventh term this year, but that Representative Tom Reynolds, chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, talked him into running," unquote. In a second set of cyber chats, Foley, author of 15 pieces of legislation designed to protect children from sexual predators, invited yet another teen to his house to drink alcohol and acknowledged that he was fully aware the boy is underage, according to a partial transcript.
A senior congressional aide said today he alerted the House Speaker Dennis Hastert's office in 2004 about inappropriate conduct by former Representative Mark Foley with teenage pages, the earliest known alert to the GOP leadership. Kirk Fordham, chief of staff at the time for Foley, told the Associated Press that when he was told about Foley's inappropriate behavior toward pages, he had, quote, "more than one conversation with senior staff at the highest level of the House of Representatives asking them to intervene." The conversations took place long before the email scandal broke, Fordham said, and at least a year earlier than members of the House GOP leadership have acknowledged.
Unfortunately, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Republican insiders said two high-ranking officials promised party officials that they would make sure Foley kept his nose clean. Representative John Shimkus, the chairman of the Page Board, as well as a staff member in Speaker Dennis Hastert's office, and Kirk Fordham, the chief of staff to high-ranking House Republican Tom Reynolds, are the officials now implicated in the scandal. In a statement, Fordham said that he, quote, "never attempted to prevent any inquiries or investigation of Foley's conduct by House officials or any other authorities," unquote. Reynolds aroused controversy yesterday for holding a press conference regarding Foley's email matter at a daycare center, where reporters asked him to ask the children to leave to ask more mature questions, which Reynolds refused to.
The issue of increased media consolidation came under scrutiny yesterday as the Federal Communications Commission held a hearing on the topic in Los Angeles. The FCC is reviving several broadcast ownership rules for the first time since 2003, when it relaxed many of the regulations concerning ownership, including allowing one company to own both a newspaper and a television station in the same market. Many speakers attending the hearing opposed the result, citing a lack of media diversity. Free Speech Radio News spoke with Jim Narikas, editor of Extra, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting's Journal of Media Criticism.
The delegations from Oaxaca had originally been called to Mexico City for a forum to include
the current.
It's vitally important that the FCC get input from the public. The FCC traditionally has been a captive of the industry that is supposed to be regulating, the broadcast industry. And over the past several years, there's been a real concerted effort to get rid of the last few rules that restrain consolidation of the broadcast industry. And, in fact, the takeover of the entire news business by the broadcast industry. And it's only because of massive public protest against these moves that there is anything left of the FCC ownership rules. Otherwise, they would be all gone today.
In other scandal-ridden news, FBI agents investigating Alaska legislators have expanded their interest from oil to fish, looking at the relationship between State Senate President Ben Stevens and the North Pacific seafood industry, which has deep roots in Puget Sound. In late August, the FBI searched the offices of Stevens and at least five other Alaska legislators and gathered documents relating to VECO, a major oil field service company that has been heavily involved in lobbying the legislature on oil tax policies and other energy issues. FBI agents returned to Stevens' office for a second search September 18th. This time, their take included two letters that Stevens wrote to the Federal Commerce Department about the Alaska Fisheries Marketing Board, according to a letter outlining the searches that Stevens provided to the Anchorage Daily News. Stevens has not disclosed what was in those fishery letters or any of the other documents taken in the searches. Stevens chaired the Alaska Fisheries Marketing Board until earlier this year. It was created in 2003 with federal legislation sponsored by his father, U.S. Senator Ted Bridge to Nowhere, the Two Meister Stevens.
A federal court in Alaska today ordered the Interior Department's Bureau of Land Management to keep more than a half million acres of environmentally sensitive land in northwest Alaska off limits to oil and gas drilling. The court order revokes a Bureau of Land Management plan that would have opened up an area around Tshikapuk Lake, which includes some of the most important wetlands in the entire Arctic. The lake's large caribou herd bears its calves and seeks relief from insects near the lake. It's also a key summer molting and nesting site for many of North America's migratory birds, such as duck, geese, swans, loons, and others. Additionally, Alaska natives rely on the area for subsistence fishing and hunting, especially for caribou.
A suburban Georgia county that once sparked a public outcry when its libraries temporarily eliminated funding for Spanish language fiction is now being asked to ban Harry Potter books from its schools. Laura Morley, a mother of four, told a hearing officer for the Gwinnett County Board of Education in Georgia yesterday that the popular fiction books are an evil attempt to indoctrinate children in the Wicca religion. Board of Education attorney Victoria Sweeney said that if schools were to remove all books containing reference to witches, they would have to ban Macbeth and Cinderella. In June, the county's library board eliminated the $3,000 that had been set aside to buy Spanish language fiction in the coming fiscal year. Days later, the board reversed its decision amid accusations that the move was anti-Hispanic. For the love of Quidditch, who put the chocolate frog up her dress?
The current time is 5:37, and now time for another highfalutin daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Remember the Alamo is an old Texas battle cry, but as we head to the polls for this year's congressional elections, here's a new battle cry. Remember Jack Abramoff. He's the disgraced super lobbyist who specialized in whining and dining key Congress critters, then getting them to return the favor by delivering tons of our tax dollars to his clients. Jack liked to call the House Appropriations Committee the, quote, favor factory. Now there's a nice civics lesson for our youth, isn't it? But Abramoff got nailed, pled guilty, and is now telling prosecutors which members delivered what for him. In a panic, House Republican leaders suddenly turned reformers, pushing out a package of new rules to reel in the corruption. That was 10 months ago. When the glare of the cameras moved on to the media's next issue du jour, the lobbyists and leadership quietly took the reforms into a back room and clubbed them to death. Then, in September, in a cynical attempt to cover their skullduggery with a political fig leaf, the leaders passed the tiniest reform possible. It merely requires that Appropriations Committee members who earmark tax dollars for special interests must now sign their names to the earmark. But even this fig leaf is shredded with loopholes. It does not apply to the 10 money bills already passed this year, and the rule expires at the end of this session of Congress, just a few weeks from now. Still, the Republicans are desperately trying to convince us that they've ended the fog and shadows of corruption by, quote, changing the culture of this institution. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's shabby. Not only are they keeping the culture of corruption intact, but their lie about changing the culture is corrupt. Ironically, the day they passed this fraud of a reform, another of their leaders was arranging guilty pleas on charges of lobbyist corruption. This election year, remember Jack Abramoff.
This Jim Hightower commentary has been brought to you by the United Steelworkers, the union committed to winning every employee's right to choose representation free from fear of being intimidated or fired. Visit us on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
This is your buddy Jim Hightower telling you to stay tuned for Circle A Radio at 6 p.m. following this newscast. And at 7, it's nonstop hip-hop with DJ Audio. Tomorrow's weather, sunshine along with some passing clouds with a high of 71 degrees with a chance of precipitation 20%. And for all you folks living in the Columbia Gorge, it'll be a partly cloudy one with a high of 66 degrees. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News, Portland, Corvallis, Vancouver, and Hood River. A new report by the influential London-based newsletter Africa Confidential has alleged that Uganda, Ethiopia, and Kenya are being used to fight a proxy war in Somalia. This with technical support from U.S. security firm Select Armor, which is funded by the U.S. administration. FSRN's Joshua Kalimpala reports.
The emails dated June this year reveal how U.S. firms have been planning undercover missions in support of President Abdullahi Yusuf's transition of federal government, using contacts based in Uganda and Kenya. Uganda denies that it is fighting a proxy war on behalf of the U.S. and has described the report as a conspiracy theory designed to foil its IGAD-supported operation in Somalia. Uganda says it is ready to deploy a 1,000-strong force in the Horn of Africa nation for peacekeeping duties. The Union of Islamic Courts, the group that controls most of Somalia, have been opposed to the deployment of the Ugandans. Hassan Shah Sheikh, the chairperson of the Eastern Horn of Africa Human Rights Defenders, has told FSRN in Kampala that indeed the planned deployment of the Uganda troops in Somalia smells of a U.S. hidden agenda in the Horn of Africa.
It's very clear that the United States government, after 9/11, they have a hidden strategy in the Horn of Africa to protect their own people and their own interests everywhere they are. And they also made clear that whoever they see, elements or governments that can have constructive engagement in overcoming those problems will be invited by the American government. It's a clear strategy put forward by the current administration of the United States. They have not denied that. But my feeling is that strategy needs also to be deployed responsibly within the region to avoid a ridership on the part of the renegade elements like the warlords in Mogadishu to take benefit of that. Somalis only can pacify their own country, but outsiders cannot decide and impose anything on them that will backfire.
One of the emails leaked to the Africa Confidential is dated Friday 16th June from Michel Bararim, chief executive of Select Armor, a U.S. military firm based in Virginia. Bararini's email was sent to a number of individuals, including Chris Farina of the Florida-based military company ATS Worldwide. In the email, Bararin boasts of a successful meeting with President Abdullahi Yusuf of Somalia and his chief of staff personnel in Nairobi, Kenya. The email also refers to a one-closed-door meeting with a senior UN figure and mentions there are a number of British security firms also looking to get involved. Bararin claims she has been given a go-ahead to use three bases in Somalia and the air access to reach them. She then suggests that the CIA have been kept informed of the plans. The latest report alleges that the U.S., which has in the past suffered humiliation from Somalia when its forces were forced to pull out from the operation codenamed Operation Restore Hope in the 1990s, doesn't want to send its troops and has resorted to the use of private firms and regional allies such as Uganda and Ethiopia fight its proxy war. But Hassan Shah Sheikh adds that the situation in Somalia may be aggravated by such moves.
As it is now, where the Islamic Courts Union now aggressively pursuing to capture new territories, when you deploy forces without any clear agreement, I'm afraid it might create a conflict within the groups, and Uganda must also look at the options available to that. Ethiopia clearly is being seen by the Islamic Court Union as coming to check and stop their advance toward power. Because of that, there is now a lot of rhetoric on both sides of the equation, each accusing the other that they want to intervene, the internal affairs of that and this. And with all this argument now, I'm afraid what the reaction could be.
Tamale Mirundi, the spokesperson of Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni, says Uganda is pursuing an independent foreign policy in Somalia from that of the U.S., and that Uganda's planned deployment in the Horn of African nation was agreed upon by the member states of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, a regional grouping.
Uganda's involvement in Somalia is not influenced by the United States. It is as a result of the IGAD summit, which started recently, and resolved to deploy troops to Somalia. Secondly, the president at one time tried to reconcile the clans in Somalia. He knows the politics of Somalia. He met the president of Ethiopia. He met a special envoy from the Eritrean president, and for instance, the Eritrean special envoy, who is the Minister of Agriculture in the government of Eritrea, was saying that now that the Islamic court have taken over control of a big part of Somalia and there is law and order, that the deployment is not necessary. But the president pointed out that the interim government in Somalia was negotiated by all the clan leaders. Though it has no army, but it derives its legitimacy from all the clan leaders. The president says that the agreement between the clan leaders, who play a very crucial role in Somalia's politics, is more important than having a government which is based on force.
Another of the emails discussing funding sent from Farina to Baralin states, we may have to refocus our efforts in the U.S. among the State Department to bring any forward movement this effort. Baralin told Africa Confidential last week that the company's operation in Somalia were classified. There is continuing behind the scenes negotiations between IGAD member states and the African Union about a regional force being deployed in Somalia, and this latest information is likely to affect the deployment plans. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Joshua Charimpa reporting from Kampala, Uganda.
Student fasts are nothing new, of course, but the Darfur crisis has caught on with American activists in a way not seen since the anti-apartheid movement of the 1980s and early 90s, and the big surprise is they're achieving great results. In the past month alone, the U.S. has appointed a special envoy to Darfur, bowing to pressure after an international day of protests, including a rally of some 30,000 in New York Central Park. A similar event in Cincinnati last week, were known as 5 Days for Darfur, also took place. Secondly, California has passed legislation to stop investing in companies supporting the Sudan regime, the fifth state to do so. More than two dozen colleges and universities are also in the process of divesting. Yesterday, student musicians from Berklee School of Music in Boston released a CD dedicated to the women of Darfur. Proceeds will benefit aid programs there run by Mercy Corps, an international humanitarian group. Finally, STAND, a student anti-genocide group since April, has grown from 7 to 55 chapters. When Miss Cato brought the individual whose story inspired the movie Hotel Rwanda to our campus last Wednesday, he packed the 750-seat auditorium with an overflow audience of at least 1,200 people.
The United Nations Human Rights Council was presented with competing resolutions on Darfur today, one from the European Union and another from Algeria. The clash between some European and Muslim countries on how to respond to atrocities in Darfur underscores a sharp division within the UN Human Rights Council. Both proposed resolutions call on all warring parties to stop fighting and allow unfettered access to humanitarian workers. Neither text mentions the possibility of UN peacekeepers replacing African Union troops in Darfur, which has been approved by the Security Council but so far blocked by Sudan's government. The resolution proposed by the European Union emphasizes the obligation of the government of Sudan to protect all individuals against violations of their human rights. Algeria's proposal, by contrast, stresses the obligation of all parties to put an immediate end to human rights violations in Darfur.
The unthinkable has come true today. Lesotho is in the news. Lesotho is celebrating its 40th anniversary of independence from Britain by introducing a new flag. The new flag has three colors: blue symbolizing rain, white for peace, and green indicating prosperity. It also features a cone-shaped hat like those worn by the country's indigenous Basotho people. The current flag was designed after a coup in 1986. Lesotho is a country that is situated in the northern part of South Africa, not far from the Botswana border.
Indonesia begins their latest round in an initiative to protect 7 million children in 9 provinces throughout the nation against measles. The initiative is led by the Indonesian Ministry of Health and Measles Initiative partners at the American Red Cross, United Nations Foundation, World Health Organization, UNICEF, and U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Last year, more than 15,000 children in Indonesia contracted measles, one of the highest numbers of cases in the world. More than 1 million Indonesian children also missed their routine immunizations, so in addition to measles inoculations, children received polio vaccinations and vitamin A to boost their immune systems as part of a unique integrated health campaign. By late 2007, Measles Initiative partners in Indonesia anticipate vaccinating 23 million children under the age of 5 and 13 million school children against the deadly disease.
The United States will forgive about 20% of the $122 million debt owed by Guatemala so the money can be used to protect threatened plants and wildlife. The deal is the largest amount of debt forgiven under the 1998 Tropical Forest Conservation Act, which allows debt owed to the United States to be invested in protecting the environment. Over $24 million will be set aside to sponsor conservation projects over the next 15 years in Guatemala's rainforests, mangrove reserves, and volcanic mountain chains. In recent years, Guatemala's national parks have been threatened by slash-and-burn agriculture and land grabs. Some scantily patrolled protected areas have also been taken over by illegal traffic or smuggling drugs, immigrants, and looted artifacts across the porous border with Mexico.
According to scientists at Britain's Hadley Center for Climate Prediction and Research, extreme drought will affect about a third of the planet by the year 2100. It is one of the most dire forecasts so far of the effects of rising temperatures around the world, and may be underestimated because it does not include potential effects on drought from global warming-induced changes to the Earth's carbon cycle. Aid agencies and development specialists fear that the poor of developing countries will be worst hit. Parts of the world already stricken by drought, such as Africa, will be the places where the projected increase will have the most severe effects. Andrew Sims from the New Economics Foundation said, "The ability to grow food, a safe sanitation system, the availability of water, for hundreds of millions of people for whom getting through the day is already a struggle, this is going to push them over the precipice." The full study will be published later this month in the Journal of Hydrometeorology.
In a city said to be at a crucial point in its history, November's highly anticipated mayoral race in Alameda, California pits incumbent Beverly Johnson against Slow Grove City Council member Doug DeHaan. And then there's a clown, and even his sister won't vote for him. Kenneth Kahn, a professional joker known as Kenny the Clown, admits he's running a long-shot campaign for City Hall's top spot. Kahn has not previously run for an elected position and has never sat on a public board. Kahn's mother, Barbara, said her son doesn't have a chance, and Sylvia Kahn, a teacher, said her brother's candidacy is a, quote, mockery of our system. In November, the funny man who graduated from the University of California at Berkeley faces incumbent Beverly Johnson and city councilman Doug DeHaan. Khan's resume includes juggling, unicycling, dressing monkeys up in funny little hats, and scaring little children.
That's the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 4th, 2006. Marking the 1,843rd day since President Bush declared that Osama bin Laden would be brought in dead or alive. If you have any questions or comments about what you've heard this evening, please call us at 503-231-8032 and leave a message on extension 203 or send an email to pmnews@kboo.org. That goes for news tips as well. Call us with your news tips at 503-231-8032, extension 203, or your pledges too. You're listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on transmitter K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on transmitter K220HR. You can log on to our website at kboo.fm. Our producer for tonight's newscast, in addition to his anchoring duties, is Noah Eaton. Our assistant producer is Lisa Loving. Our wire editors are Jim Thompson, Martha Odom, and Prentice Darden. Tonight's audio editor is Robert Barncourt. Our engineer is Brianna Loringer. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And as Brian said, I'm Noah Eaton. And coming up tomorrow at 7 a.m., hear the KBOO Morning News. At 7:30, it's Voices from the Edge talk radio of Joanne Bowman. At 9, it's Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know, with Teresa Mitchell. Her guest is Dr. Andy Roth, Associate Director of Project Censored. The project just released Censored 2007, the top 25 censored stories. At 10, Stephanie Potter hosts The Recovery Zone. She'll speak with Jen Adams, director of Chinook Book, a guide to living well and having fun in the Portland and Eugene metro area. At 10:30 on Art Focus, Julie Bernard hosts part one of a two-part show with David Eckerd, performer and educator, and Stephen Hayes, painter and printmaker. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. That's all right here on KBOO, your nonprofit, volunteer-powered, and listener-sponsored community radio station. Volunteer with our humble broadcast by calling 503-231-8032 or extension 203. And now we're going to give you back one last time to our good friends at the Membership Drive Central.
Good evening, and once again I'd like to thank those people who have called up and made those pledges of support, become members of KBOO during this, our fall membership drive. Most recently, Bill from out in Malala and Brianna also called. Thank you very much. They called those magic numbers, 503-232-8818. Or I know we had one call from over in Vancouver, and that toll-free number is 1-877-500-5266. And these people have called because that huge list of fantastic programs coming your way on KBOO that Brian and Noah just went through, all of that is available because this is a non-commercial community radio station. This is a radio station that cares more about the information that is being sent out over the airwaves than the amount of money that it can generate. We do not advertise. We do not sell our airwaves to the lowest common denominator. We instead ask you, our educated and interested and enlightened listeners, to help pay for it. Kind of like the way you subscribe to your favorite magazine or your favorite service. KBOO is your radio magazine. It is your radio service. And for it to continue, we do need your support. We've had great support today on our first day of the drive, and you can continue that by calling those magic numbers. What are those numbers, John?
Those numbers are 503-232-8818 or toll free at 1-877-500-5266.
And we were talking at the last break that when you become a KBOO member, not only do you know in your heart of hearts that you're keeping this fantastic resource on the air, but you get a membership card.
And there are a number of benefits to that membership card besides, you know, being able to show all your friends that you're helping out such a great resource. You know, there's some cool businesses here, like Bagelland. I think on this list there's a little bit of everything. There's music, there's tattoo, there's a vet clinic,
there's a gym, there's massage, there's music, a tattoo parlor, we have a pet psychic,
Flamenco Arts Academy,
learn how to flamenco dance, and this is great stuff. With your KBOO membership card, you get discounts at a variety of cooperating businesses all over the Portland area, because these businesses understand that this would not be the city it is today, it would not be the wonderful place to live, were it not for community radio. So they'll say, yeah, we will share our goods and services with you, the KBOO members. We'll give you a discount. You get this fantastic little brochure with your card after you become a member. And let's see, what else we have? Portland Center Stage, haircuts, piano lessons from Jonathan Eater, attorney fees, a couple naturopathic doctors.
Coffee.
The list goes on and on. The bottom line is non-commercial community radio. Community radio. It stays community radio because you, the community, support it with your hard-earned dollars. Lisa was on here earlier suggesting that think about what do you earn in a day? Not a day, but an hour. What do you earn in 1 hour on your job? Could you think about contributing that 1 hour once a month to KBOO Radio? Okay? Think about it. Minimum wage, about $7.50 now. Maybe make a little more, maybe $10 an hour. Could you put in $10 a month to community radio? Over the course of a year, that's $120 for the year, a sustaining membership. We could, if you want, organize that from the electronic funds transferred directly out of your checking account. It's simple. It's painless. 503-232-8818 is the number to call. Become a KBOO member today. Circle A Radio is coming up in just a moment. They've got some fantastic programming coming your way, focused on the country of Bolivia, I believe, this afternoon, so stick around for that. But you've just finished listening to the newscast, the news that, as I say, you're not supposed to know, the news that is often not available anywhere else, the news that I'm guessing you tune into more often than not throughout the week to keep in touch with things happening around your world, the news that's going to help you make more informed choices in the world and more informed action in the world. Support that newscast by calling 503-232-8818. That's 503-232-8818 or toll free
1-877-500-5266.
And I think they're coming up now. Circulate Radio. Oh, I'm still going. Okay. Well, I just want to mention that in this time of the season, we have a lot of people asking for money. The elections are coming up, ballot measures, candidates. A lot of people are asking you for your money. Remember that KABU is the outlet, the voice, that gives these people the opportunity to get their message out to you.
So once again, before we throw it over to Circle A Radio, if you want to help donate to this fine radio station we got here right here, the number to call is 503-232-8818 or toll free at 1-877-500-5266. And now we're going to throw it over to Circle A Radio.
And thank you to Josh and David. Stay tuned for Circle A Radio.
Until recently, the world saw Bolivia as a country of little international importance. A relatively small, landlocked, and financially impoverished nation in the heart of South America, the majority of Bolivia's population is comprised of indigenous communities who've never lived with a government that has represented their interests and who have suffered hundreds of years of exclusion and inequality. The election of the first indigenous president, Evo Morales, showed the world Bolivia's commitment to reverse neoliberal economic reforms. How Bolivia handles these issues will be critical to the understanding of globalization and its interrelations with poverty and inequality, cultural and indigenous resistance, democracy and representation. A vital part of this cultural resistance will no doubt include international solidarity. The Bolivian Solidarity Network is working to build a bridge of international support for Bolivia's social movements in their fight for human rights and global justice, and to provide current information about issues to inspire solidarity with Bolivia.
Tonight on Circle A Radio, we will be hearing from Juliet Beck, global justice organizer with the Bolivian Solidarity Network, and Thea Riofrancos, a member of the Portland Central America Solidarity Committee, who spent a month in Bolivia working with the Bolivian Solidarity Network. Stay tuned.
This is Juliet Beck.
The Bolivians in April 2000 fought a fierce battle against the Bechtel Corporation, which is headquartered in San Francisco, and they were successful in kicking Bechtel out of Cochabamba, Bolivia's third largest city. So we had been inspired by their success, and we had learned that you can be successful at protecting your water from corporate takeover. And I had told the story many, many times and realized I needed to go back to Bolivia to really learn how they did it, how they organized, and how these social movements have succeeded in also toppling presidents. We have quite a headache here with Bush, and I thought we could learn a thing or two from how to overthrow a president.
This is Thea Riofrancos.
I had kind of a different route, I guess, into Bolivia, though we kind of ended in similar places. I actually have always been really interested in Latin America, and while I was at Reed, did a lot of my research, like, focused on different case studies, and I decided for my thesis I need to do it on Bolivia. This is, like, the most exciting thing going on in Latin America. So I did this year-long research project on neoliberalism and social movements and how they've evolved over time in Bolivia, kind of like a 50-year-long case study, and then didn't get a chance to do any field work, so as soon as I graduated, I went there, and it was, like, really great to see kind of all of these, like, arguments and facts and histories, like, sort of in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great, great place.
Mm-hmm. Well, I arrived in Bolivia a year ago and was able to connect up with the Coordinating Committee of Water and for Life, Coordinadora de Agua y por la Vida, and this was the committee that had organized the protest against Bechtel, and it's spearheaded by Oscar Oliveira, is a well-known social movement leader. And they are working with a team of organizers, of young organizers, many of them affiliated with Indie Media in Bolivia, and very committed to, you know, radical, righteous social movement organizing. So I was able to learn from them how they are working closely with the labor movement. My first day in Bolivia, actually, there was a mobilization in front of
of the water company, because although they've been able to kick Bechtel out, it's been a much longer, harder-term process of gaining what they call social control over their water company. And there's corruption within the existing union that's blocked a lot of the reforms that would create greater accountability to people who don't have water, particularly in the southern zone of Cochabamba, where women are still collecting water with their children for many hours a day and don't have access to the clean water. So when I was arrived in Bolivia, there was a mobilization of people from the southern zone who don't have water had basically were taking over the utility, the plant. It's called Samapa. And they were mobilizing and they were going to just storm the utility. Well, it was the most amazing moment of direct democracy that I've ever witnessed, because the council for Samapa, the water board, set up their meeting right in front of this huge crowd that had assembled in front of the water utility. And they voted right then and there on the demands that people were making in the crowd for there to be smoother running. At the time, they were demanding that one of the board members be kicked off the board. And so the mayor and everyone came right in front of this community of people that assembled and voted. And it was just, to me, this is an example of how social movements demand accountability. It's direct, it's specific, and it's visible, and they're constantly mobilized. So it was just one example of the lessons that I've taken from Bolivia.
I think for me, one of the most interesting things, and this is both in writing my thesis and in being there, it's like immediately obvious, is the way that indigenous culture and all the symbols and discourses and Quechua and Aymara phrases that are used constantly in the protests and in social movements, how all these indigenous symbols have been mobilized to fight neoliberalism. It's like a totally like innovative kind of method of mobilizing people, because I mean, previously actually Bolivia's social movements were mostly labor-based and not based in indigenous communities, not based in farming and kind of indigenous lifestyle there. And there have been, because there is actually an explicit policy among neoliberal policymakers to destroy the labor movement there, they had to like regroup, like what are we gonna do, basically. And indigenous mobilizing has been like their response, and it both has been a really effective way to fight neoliberalism. I mean, the kinds of things that Juliet was just talking about are coming out of the indigenous communities, and the leadership is all indigenous, but also manages to touch on issues of internal colonialism and racism, and show how those things have been historically connected to neoliberalism. And I think that's like a really exciting thing, and a model that works, you know, is emerging in a lot of Latin America and around the world.
And welcome back. We're here at the KBOO Pledge Station. I'm looking at Aaron and David. What are you seeing from over your side of the plexiglass, guys?
I'm looking at Jody and Trillium of Circle A Radio.
That's right. And listening to a fascinating program about what's going on in Bolivia these days. And I love the thought of the indigenous population, the local element, and the community, the essence of the community working together to change and alter what's happening in their nation. And I'm thinking, isn't that what KBOO Radio is? It's community. It's people getting together to affect and alter the world in which we live. And that's, for us, that's here in Portland, Oregon. And it's using this outlet, this media outlet, to get the message out, to change perceptions, to look at ways to think about what's happening in new ways. And you, our listeners, are part of this. And we're asking you now to become a financial supporter to help facilitate the work of Trillium and Jody and Aaron here on Circle A Radio and all the other people who work here at KBOO by becoming a member today.
503-232-8818 is the number to call to show your support for us financially in the Portland area. And 1-877-500-5266 is the long-distance number for those of you out in the outlying areas to call and give us your support.
The basic KBOO membership for 1 year is $40 a year. It's been that way for decades. But we do have a limited income membership at $20 a year. And I was reminded by Joel, who was here earlier, that we do have a youth membership at $10. So variety of ways to join the station. It was suggested earlier that maybe you consider 1 hour of your salary every month and contribute that to community radio to help keep this media outlet strong, to keep the voices coming to you, because that's what it's all about. That's why you're here. That's why we're all here.
Yeah, and it's really no fun to think that you're making radio in a bubble either. It's really exciting when you hear the phones ring and you know that people are listening and you know that people have things to say about what we're doing here at KBOO. That really makes the exchange of energy so much more fun. So we want to hear the phones ring here at the station. We want you to call 503-232-8818 and let us know that you're out there, because sometimes it's real lonely here. I just saw a tumbleweed go by. We want to know that there are people who are really excited about what we're doing, just as excited about it as we are. So again, 503-232-8818 are the magic numbers to call here in Portland to support KBOO Community Radio.
And if you are listening across the river in Vancouver or down the valley or up the gorge, you can call us toll-free at 1-877-500-5266. We do have some lovely gifts that we can send your way with your membership. I see four fantastic T-shirts that you can get with your membership, and you wear that T-shirt and you kind of tell the world, tell your friends, tell the people about KBOO One. We've got the picture of some demonstrators here. It says KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, put the riot back in Patriot. That's a wild shirt. We've got the KBOO versus the Media Zillas, beautiful T-shirt, which really, I think, gets the heart of community radio, because we are the antithesis of Fox Broadcasting.
Mm-hmm. We also have some books to give away as thank you gifts. During the news, they were talking about the Christian Williams book. He's been a former guest on Circle A Radio, The American Methods, Torture, and the Logic of Domination. We also have books by Cindy Sheehan. We have a Howard Zinn book that's not even out yet. We have a whole bunch of other cool things to thank you. But really, the point of just we need your money to support what we're actually doing. And 503-232-8818 is the phone number to call.
We do rely on your contributions. I would say approximately 70% or more of the budget here at KBOO comes directly from listener contributions. It makes it a community station. We're not beholden to some corporation for our money. We're not beholden to advertisers. It's you, the listener, that call the shots down here. It's you, the listener, that tells us what you want to hear and when you want to hear and what to do. In fact, when you become a member, you are truly part owner of this radio station. You get to vote when our board of directors has an election. You get run for the board of directors if you choose to do so once you're a member. It is your radio station, 503-232-8818. Join today. This is the first day of our fall membership drive. We're doing really well. We've had a great response so far. One person's on the phone now, but there's other volunteers that would love to talk to you and tell you about the fantastic things you can get and give to KBOO Radio.
We're going to go back to our program in just a couple minutes, but we do want to hear those phones ring some more. It's really easy. You pick up the phone, you dial 503-232-8818, and there's a variety of ways you can give. I like to do $10 a month out of my checking account, and you can get that directly taken out. No big deal. A lot of us pay that much for movies every month. Beer, we pay a lot more for beer than that every month, most of us. So
I know I do.
We all know that. And we have a lot of fun doing this radio show. We're really excited to be able to bring you news from people's movements all over the world. And all we ask is that twice a year you pick up that phone and you pledge your support for KBOO and for Circle A Radio. So 503-232-8818 is the number here in Portland, or if you're a little further out in the Gorge, Salem, give us a call toll-free, 1-877-500-5266.
And if you're even further out than that and listening on the Internet, you can also pledge online. So listen at www.kboo.fm, and you can hit the Join Now button at the top right, and there you go. Join now.
All right. We're asking nicely right now, you guys, but you know what? Give us about 45 minutes, and we're not going to be so nice, if you know what I mean. 503-232-8818. Give us a call now. 503
832-8818. Make your pledge for Circle A Radio and for KBOO Community Radio.
First Friday of every month, there's a Aimara ritual, the Koa, where coca is burned, and there's invocation to Pachamama, which is the Aimara word for Mother Earth, and dancing, and it's like something that all the social movement leaders participate in, but it's kind of a spiritual and cultural space. So all of these things are kind of, the cultural and the political are getting blurred with this use of symbol and discourse. One is the Wefala, which is the checkered flag, which is an Aymara flag, and it's like a rainbow of colors, and it's like a checkered sort of is a way to represent the unity of indigenous groups there, and it's omnipresent everywhere in every village.
Now flying in front of the presidential palace.
Yeah, so it's just it's everywhere, and it's a really potent symbol. It came out of the mobilizations, and I think the water wars were one of the first times it was used, but even in the indigenous marches in the early 90s, that kind of emerged as a potent symbol. And then speaking in Quechua and Aymara publicly at protest sites, and even Morales, before he speaks, there'll be like a synopsis of his policy in Quechua by someone else. I mean, all of these really public pronouncements in Quechua and Aymara are so potent in a country where you still have a system of internal colonialism and racism and repression. To like speak in that language is amazing. And then the like use of what are considered Andean values, which are, I guess, complementarity, reciprocity,
solidarity,
these like core values, which have been very consciously constructed over time and as a way to respond to repression, as a mode of resistance, to like bring out these traditional value systems. And they're constantly referred to also. So.
Yeah, no, it's a different worldview, in fact.
Yeah.
And they celebrate what they call the Andean cosmovision. And it's very clear, we don't want to be another Western colonized society. The United States is one of the most corporate colonized places on the planet, and the Bolivians have a very clear analysis of how they're needing to remove the layers of colonization, decolonize mm-hmm. not just their culture and their society, but also their minds, the way
right.
they think.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, the colonialism is so ever, I mean, it's shocking. It's not like something that you can imagine unless you're there. Actually, Juliana and I were talking about this recently. We were both at this bakery in Cochabamba, and this upper middle class woman comes up to us seeing two lighter skinned people and thinking that she has, you know, some friends or something, some allies, and she starts talking to us, and she lived in the U.S. for a while. She's super conservative and pro-Bush, and we're trying to be diplomatic and, you know, not alienate this woman but also not agree with her, and then she starts talking about, she's like, yo, do you know who our president is? Evo Morales. You know, he's just this Indian, he doesn't know how to read or write, he goes barefoot, like,
can he even take a shower? He probably
right.
doesn't even take a shower.
I mean, this is the totally, like, typical view of the ruling class in Bolivia right now, and it's actually almost becoming more racist and more kind of crazy about this issue because they're being challenged by the social movements there, and mm-hmm. so they're actually becoming more extreme in their views. And mm-hmm. so those issues of colonialism and racism are, like, still ever present there.
And going back to the social movements, you know, when the water war resulted in this heroic victory of kicking Bechtel out of Cochabamba, it gave sort of a boost to the social movements, that when they organized and mobilized together, they could really succeed at something that just seemed infinitely like an infinite challenge. When they reorganized 3 years later during what's now referred to as the gas war, social movements came together from all over the country. They led marches, that the miners started marching from Potosi, and it's, you know, a 10-hour bus ride. I can't imagine, it must have taken them, you know, a week or two to get to La Paz, the capital city. They marched on foot across the country from all corners of the country to gather in the capital. It was a pivotal moment, and it's actually kind of almost an enigma as to how
the social movements organize, especially the indigenous movements. I mean, literally the stars have to be aligned, and there's tapping into kind of a deeper rhythm. And in the universe, when they gather, though, and they choose to organize around a specific moment, this combustion of forces comes together. And in this case, they were able to shut down the capital for over practically a month of mass protest blockades. And after a few weeks of food and gas shortages in La Paz, in the capital, then President Gonzalez Sanchez de Lozada, who's referred to as Goni, who was basically put in office by U.S. campaign consultants. He should have never been elected. He was elected on just a very thin margin and never really had a mandate in this country, but is known as the privatization president in Bolivia. He called out the troops, the military and the police, who indiscriminately fired on the protesters and resulted in 67 people being killed, including children in their homes and, you know, people who were administering first aid on the streets. And over 400 people were wounded as well. And October 2003 is now a moment in Bolivian social movement. As we speak, October is the month where there's a massive amount of commemoration around this event, around what they consider a massacre and even a genocide, since most of the people killed were of indigenous descent. So it was seen as an attack on a specific group of people. The social movements are calling for a trial of responsibility that's actually gone through the process of getting approval in the Bolivian legislature and the Supreme Court, and they want Goni to return to Bolivia to stand trial. At the end of the protests, in October 2003, Goni left the country in a jet bound for the United States, and he now resides in Chevy Chase, Maryland, and he's, you know, a friend of the Democratic Party, a friend of the Republican Party. He's got friends in high places, and he lived a very comfortable life, going to country clubs. And the Bolivians are furious. To them, he is their number one criminal, and the United States is harboring their public enemy, you know, number one. They're essentially their bin Laden, really, a terrorist in this country. And so there's a need for solidarity with Bolivian social movements that's made a very clear request to assist and pressure the government, pressure to do everything we can to make it known that this ex-president Goni is a criminal and he needs to return for trial. So that's what's coming up now, and the solidarity work that we're doing, it's become the priority as requested by Bolivians. When I arrived in Bolivia last year, a year ago, I attended a mass in the cemetery where a year before that the bodies had been exhumed so that they could do the basically validate that these were people killed in the protests. They were doing the forensic study and to assist with the trial. Now they've been the bodies have been laid to rest in a mausoleum, and every year there's a mass with the women and the families of the people who died in the gas war. And it was a very moving, traumatic experience. The wounds are still very raw there. So this is the work that the Bolivia Solidarity Network, working with other groups in Bolivia called the Comité Impulsor and the Association of Family Members Fallen in Defense of Gas, and we hope that they will be here to represent this issue in front of the U.S. government in a few weeks as well. There was a plan on that Goni brought up. He made one, like, terrible strategic political mistake after another. I mean, you can't even imagine where he got these plans, but he decided to export Bolivian gas, which was previously privatized, actually, under his previous administration in the early 90s. So gas had already been privatized for like 10 years by him. So he was in his second presidency, and he decided to export gas to California, which is bad enough in and of itself because that's a really touchy issue, the exportation of privatized gas. But not only that, but the pipeline through which he was going to export it was in Chile, and Bolivians hate Chile because they, in a war in 1879, basically Chile won sea access and Bolivia is now landlocked. So there's a lot of bitterness about Chile, but even more so the gas issue. So kind of these issues of nationalism and of anti-privatization combined and just erupted. I mean, they're so angry. And then after that, actually, he had another terrible political move, which was to impose a tax on, like, to increase the income tax in Bolivia to pay off IMF debts. And that actually resulted in the police fighting against the military, which is because the police are, like, very organized there. And there, they're kind of actually in solidarity with a lot of working class movements because they have a very militant union and were already making a lot of demands on the government to increase their wages, and this would have like doubled their taxes. So they organized with other social movements against the military who was defending the government, and that's part of what erupted in this 2003 protest. So it was like both the gas thing and this income tax thing, and a shootout between the police and the military. And when you go to the main plaza in La Paz, where the government, all the federal buildings are, there are gunshots in the buildings from the shootout still. Yeah, so it was a gas issue, and it was a nationalism issue, and it was also this kind of economic justice issue where really poor people would be having, working class people would be having to help pay off the IMF debt.
Bolivia was one of the countries that qualified for debt cancellation if they followed a very strict set of prescriptions mandated by the World Bank and the IMF. So they've been a model student implementing every globalization, privatization, trade liberalization policy that these institutions came up with. And just in the last year, the World Bank has canceled their debt, and now we're pressuring the Inter-American Development Bank to also cancel Bolivia's debt, and the International Monetary Fund canceled Bolivia's debt. And it's quite a remarkable time because this IMF is probably the weakest it's ever been in history after the debacle with handling Argentina's collapse of the peso in that country. Argentina paid off the IMF debt and said, you know, get lost, we never want to see you again. Bolivia has basically done the same thing, which is quite remarkable for a country of its size to say no to the IMF. And what's giving Bolivia some breathing room is that there's also the presence of Venezuela in Latin America that's able to help underwrite some of the costs of what is now Evo Morales' development plan. It's another place where Bolivia could turn to in the case of an economic meltdown. So it's, like I said, this is a historic moment when Bolivia might actually have the breathing room to chart a different course and break free from the chains of debt that have prevented so many options for other countries.
And hopefully also this would help facilitate, as these countries in Latin America are breaking free from the IMF at the same time that relatively left-wing, I mean there's a range, but relatively left-wing presidents are being elected. Hopefully this kind of opens up the opportunity for a new model of regional integration that is not based on neoliberal dogma, but instead on solidarity and cooperation. And the framework for this new regional integration has already been written by Venezuela, Bolivia, and Cuba, but hopefully it can reach through to other countries, including Argentina, other economically powerful countries that are looking for a new route away from neoliberalism.
Well, we're back here at Pledge Central. We got David and Chris here. We're going to see what they have to say. We're going to go ahead and tell them why they should pledge, you guys.
Three words. I just heard them in that last interview. Solidarity, reciprocity, cooperation. Three important words that come down to the essence of community radio. It's about cooperation with our audience. Reciprocity, we put things out there. We want to hear back from you. And cooperate, solidarity, join with the community, 503-232-8818. That's the number. Show some solidarity with community radio. Become a member.
You are listening to the Circle A program that's heard twice a month on Wednesday evenings here on KBOO. We hope you're enjoying it. One of the things that is really great about some of our evening public affairs, Monday through Friday, 6 to 7, quite a number of them are cooperatively produced. They're collectives. In fact, we have two collectives in the building tonight. There's the KBOO Youth Collective in the front room meeting about their show. And Circle A is a collective. It's a group of people who get together to work out a philosophy and mission for what their program's going to be, and then they each divide it up into different kinds of jobs, reporting and editing and announcing. And we have a huge number of volunteers here at KBOO in the evenings, 15-20 people in the building right now, all working on doing radio. And it's brought to you by literally nothing more than a $5 bill or $20 or $10 a month or a check or something like that. A few dollars from all of you who are listening. Keep this kind of radio and this kind of journalism alive.
503-232-8818. That's the number to call, 503-232-8818. And it is your contributions from $5 to $25 to $50, whatever you can afford. That contribution allows these different collectives, these different groups of volunteers to get on the radio. Your contributions pay the bills. Your contributions keep the equipment running. Keep it up to date. Your contributions pay for your electricity. Your contributions pay for the salary of the staff that help teach and train the volunteers how to do radio.
I'll give you another example. You can't do radio without equipment. Mixing boards, microphones, computer, software. If I said, you know, you think, what's $20 or $30 going to do? I go, well, about 3 or 4 years ago, we spent $40,000 and we completely rebuilt a production room with a brand new equipment. We've standardized over a dozen computers with news editing software so everybody in the building can network and use it to edit news programs.
We, of course, have our satellite downlink, which gets us programming from all over the world.
We just purchased probably about a half a dozen flash recorders for our reporters so they can go out and do news stories.
And we're able to do all of this because for many, many years, you, the listeners, have help pay the bills. You, the listeners, have said, yeah, this is a valuable resource. I want to keep it strong. I want to keep it on the air, and I'll help pay for it.
When I was your age, you know, we didn't have community radio. We'd have a can and a couple cans and a string, and we used to, you know, go behind trees and talk to each other.
Oh, you were lucky.
Way.
You had a can and a string.
We just had to show.
When I was a kid, we lived in a rolled-up newspaper on the street.
But wait, times have changed. Times have changed. Now we have this wonderful resource of community radio, and you, yes, you, can be a member of it.
And now we have telephones, so you can pick up your phone and dial 503-232-8818. And another great thing about having the phones and having the community radio to support this kind of programming is that we at Circle A Radio have called all over the world. We've called people in Bolivia, India, all over the world in the United States.
We've run the bill up real high here at KBOO.
We have, and we need you to help pay it. And that's the way that we're able to get first-hand reports from movements, people's movements, just like the ones we have in the U.S., and perhaps more inspiring than what we have going on in the U.S. many times. We have been able to get reports from those movements directly, so we do need you to call and support this programming by dialing 503-232-8818. And we know we've got a lot of listeners outside of the Portland area. Please call toll-free at 1-877-500-5266. You can do a monthly deduction from your checking if you'd like. I find that to be one of the most convenient ways to do it. And the person, our fine volunteers who are waiting, standing by to take your phone call, can help set you up on a plan like that. $5 a month would be $60 for the year. So it's a pretty easy way to do things.
What we really like to get you to call in, and I do have a wonderful gift that we can offer to you. We've been talking about people's movements, people's power. Howard Zinn, an author that I hope many of you are familiar with, has a new book coming out, not even published yet, to be published in December, but we have copies. It's called A Power Governments Cannot Suppress. It's a collection of essays on history, class, justice, immigration, and things that ordinary citizens like yourselves here in this country and around the world have done, a power that governments cannot suppress. And community radio, KBOO Community Radio, helps get out that message for those people. Give us a call. Make the pledge. A $75 pledge gets you a copy of this book, gets you a KBOO membership, makes you part owner, yes, part owner of community radio.
We have one more. Speaking of KBOO's own journalism, last spring, Lisa Loving, who was who's our evening news director, put together a series called Oregon's War Economy, a report about how different kind of corporations and businesses in Oregon profit from money that's given to the war industry. It was put together by a number of our volunteers, and we have a cassette or CD of that available for a $60 pledge, but you have to call now before 7. We've only got a few minutes left. Circle A is going to be back on in just a second and finish their program for the evening. And the phones are ringing. We still have extra phones open, a couple of people ready to take your call. All we need from you is one moment of your time, your name, and how much you would like to pledge this evening to support KBOO. The number again is 503-232-8818, and we thank you from the bottom of our hearts for all of your generosity tonight.
And if you're sitting around waiting for a gift to be announced, don't worry about it. You just call up. We have all sorts of gifts to give you folks if
you want
to. I
can bring
pledge.
A gift by. If you go ahead and pledge, I'll just go ahead and I'll bring a gift over. We have, right now I'm looking at a really nice bright orange cough button that we have here in the station. I'll go ahead and rip it off and I'll bring it to your house. 503-232-8818. You never know when you're going to need one of these things, especially in the cold and flu season when that comes around. 503-232-8818. Give up a little bit of cash for KBOO Community Radio.
General en jefe del Ejército Libertador del Sur, Emiliano Zapata, Manifiesto Zapatista en Agua.
Por el suelo hay una compadrita que ya nadie se para a mirar. Por el suelo hay una mamacita que se muere de no respetar. Pachamama, te veo tan triste. Pachamama, me pongo a llorar.
Juliet Beck.
The U.S. is just feeling kind of threatened now by the regional resurgence in Latin America of left-wing governments, of social movements, and of kind of more nationally oriented economic policies as opposed to this kind of neoliberal model. And I think Bush has just grouped Morales together with Chavez, with Castro, with the kind of whole hated group, and has claimed that Morales is a narco-trafficker, that he's undermining democracy, which is kind of absurd considering he has the largest mandate since Bolivia was a democratic country. All of these claims to sort of, I mean, the goal of which must be to kind of destabilize the country there, to make people scared there of U.S. intervention or of whether it's military, economic, or whatever. And then there are kind of more covert ways that the U.S. has tried to limit the scope of possibility in Bolivia through organizations like USAID and the National Endowment for Democracy, which are just front groups, as we all know. They've kind of contributed to right-wing groups and trying to mold social movement leaders in the U.S. to kind of limit the threat of social movement leaders. So there is a threat there. It's not as overt as it is in Venezuela or other countries, but I think it's slowly building.
Well, Bolivia is such a small country, mm-hmm. 8 million people, that Bush, if and when he chooses to focus on Bolivia, could really squash it like a bug. And they're able to, right now, paint the picture for people in the United States. Evo's a narco-trafficker, which is starting to spread propaganda, and that's why it's so important that we get the truth out about who Evo Morales is, that he was elected democratically by a huge margin, and that he has a mandate to govern there that's been quite historic, and that this couldn't be farther from the truth, that there's an erosion of democracy in Bolivia.
Well, ALBA was designed by Venezuela's government, by Chavez, and it's a really far-reaching plan for regional integration, and I guess a smaller component of that is the People's Trade Agreement, which is a model for solidarity-based trade, and there are already, like, tons of these agreements signed between Venezuela, Cuba, and Bolivia for different products and in different sectors, but I think a total of like 20 treaties were signed by Venezuela and Bolivia the day that Evo was inaugurated. And There's this really great model out there, and there's lots of opportunities for that with the other Andean nations and for Mercosur, which is the Southern Cone nations, hopefully. Actually, Venezuela recently joined Mercosur as an active member, so hopefully that regional bloc will also be swaying to the left, and maybe there'll be some exciting opportunities there.
As we see, the other institution of corporate rule, the World Trade Organization, the talks around expanding the WTO have been sidelined, that they basically have stopped their negotiations in the WTO. Trade activists have said that, and countries are now realizing that regional integration is a way for countries to develop by trading among themselves. So Bolivia has positioned itself and is now playing a key role in the region to organize their Andean nations in a bloc. And this is perceived as an incredible threat to U.S. control and U.S. hegemony. So the U.S. is continuing its age-old policies of divide and conquer and is right now forcing each of the Andean countries essentially to sign up for what's called a bilateral between two countries trade agreement. So the U.S. a few years ago had signed the U.S.-Chile agreement. Now in Congress, the U.S.-Peru agreement is pending approval, and the U.S. is asserting its influence by actually trying to exclude Bolivia from receiving trade preferences unless Bolivia starts to sign up and begin negotiating a U.S.-Bolivia trade agreement. So whereas it's kind of like when you stick your finger in a water hose and it just squirts out somewhere else. You know, we've put a lot of pressure on the WTO, but now these bilaterals are actually even more extreme in terms of a trade liberalization agenda, and that's why we continue to need a lot of support from trade solidarity movements as well.
It's actually even more important now for regional kind of solidarity to say no to these, and Bolivia is staying with the community of Andean nations and trying to, within that bloc, push for unity among the Andean nations to say no to these agreements. And we need to organize here, which PCASC is doing, to pressure our members of Congress and to inform and educate people about the Peru Free Trade Agreement. And the next one, it will be the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, which is Colombia has the worst record in the world for killing labor activists. Right now, the Ecuador Free Trade Agreement is stalled because of extreme, popular uprising there.
Well, first and foremost is education, being able to stay current and aware of the key opportunities for intervention. And, for example, October 17th is an opportunity for us to organize around what's been called as an International Day of Solidarity with Bolivia, and it corresponds to the date that Goni fled Bolivia on the jet to the United States, when there will be a large march through the streets of La Paz leading from the indigenous city of El Alto that's on the high plain, the Altiplano, above the city of La Paz. There will be a large march on that date in commemoration of Goni's and the massacre that occurred there in October 17th, 2003. I think there's also just going to be opportunities that more than just jumping into action is the chance to do some deeper learning from the Bolivian movements and to educate ourselves about things like the Andean Cosmovision. What are these principles? What does complementarity mean? And we see in this country things in terms of a polarity. It's very black and white, and even in our social movements, we're very quick to be judgmental, and we're almost our own worst enemies when we pit ourselves against each other that way. And instead of seeing that there's a sense of complementarity, how do we organize in a way that where we can see each of us bringing in something important to our movement, something that complements what other people bring into the movement. So there's lots of important lessons to be learned from Bolivia.
Something that I think is really interesting with solidarity work with Bolivia, that's something I haven't figured out, and I think that the network, the Bolivia Solidarity Network, hasn't quite figured out, because it's very complicated, where our solidarity lies in Bolivia. And it's something that's relevant to other countries. It's very relevant to Venezuela. Also, when there are really strong, radical, militant social movements and also a relatively progressive government in place, where do you do your work? And sometimes it overlaps and it's not, it's relatively simple and the government is actually carrying out what the social movements are demanding. But sometimes it's more complicated. Like from the U.S., we have, as solidarity activists, we have an obligation to kind of defend Bolivia's sovereignty against possible U.S. intervention, whether it's military, economic, propaganda, whatever method they're trying. But on the other hand, on the Bolivian side, we do feel like our place of solidarity is with the social movements, and it's complicated when the social movements there are actually really critical of what the government is doing, where exactly our solidarity lies. But I think it's not a negative thing, it's like a positive thing, because it's so amazing there how autonomous the movements have remained and how strong they've remained in demanding accountability from the government. I think that's definitely a lesson we have to learn in the U.S.
Once again, in the Andean or Bolivian context, for them, accountability isn't just, and democracy isn't just, electing someone to represent you and then potentially re-electing them in 4 years and just sort of forgetting about them in the meantime. Accountability is immediate and real, in the sense that if you are straying from representing the demand and the mandate of the populace, you will be removed instantly. People will take direct and immediate action to replace their representatives. And at any given time in Bolivia,
every issue, this has been, with Morales watching this from the U.S. or from within Bolivia, it was like, well, what's going to happen? How are the movement's going to respond? Are they going to give him breathing room? And it just played out that they have given him some breathing room. There are protests every day in Bolivia, but it hasn't, the insurgent kind of aspect has calmed down and given him some space. But at every single turn, if you don't do this, general strike. And the coca farmers, he's the leader of one of the five biggest coca federations in Bolivia, but coca farmers have been angry when he hasn't extended the amount of land that you're allowed to grow coca on, and there's been negotiations there, and with the nationalization of gas. On all of these issues, there's been constant pressure, which has actually put him in quite a tough spot. Pressure from the international kind of end, mm-hmm. and from the U.S., and then pressure from the movements. Pachacuti is a really interesting concept that's hard to translate, but it basically translates into change through upheaval, kind of. So a complete reversal of the status quo, in a sense. And this is supposed to occur every 500 years, according to the kind of Andean worldview. And it happened once during colonialism, and it coincides with both colonialism but also extreme resistance to colonialism. But from the 16th to the 18th centuries, there was like extreme protest in the whole Andean world. So at that point, the countries were not divided as they are now. So Peru and Bolivia, Ecuador, Colombia, and even the tip of Argentina, they're all of these protests and resistance to colonialism. And then the next wave of Pachacuti is right now, actually, so 500 years later. And it's a really powerful way to kind of connect the past to the present in Bolivia, which is, as I said, with the indigenous discourse constantly. There's constant referrals. Even the names of some of these indigenous groups come from those anti-colonial resistance leaders from the Tupac Katari, the Catarista movement, which emerged in the 1970s, which was the kind of first modern indigenous rights movement in Bolivia. Got its name from Tupac Katari, the indigenous anti-colonial leader from the 18th century. So there's this constant kind of back and forth, like moving through history.
Cuídate, no te vaya a mojar. Escuchando la última rola, mamacita, te invito a bailar. Por el suelo camina mi pueblo, por el suelo hay un agujero, por el suelo camina la raza, mamacita te vamos a matar. Esperando la última ola, Pachamama me muero.
Well, oh my goodness, we're back at Pledge Central here at KBOO 90.7 FM. We got David sitting behind a piece of glass. David, are you with us?
I am, and I got to say, anarchists rock. We are $50 over our program goal. We've had a huge response. Big, big thanks to Andriana, Alexandria, Louise, Just three of the people who have called up this day, on this first day of our fall membership drive, to say yes to community radio, say we support the concept of a community-based, non-commercial, listener-owned radio station, and we're willing to help pay for it.
And a big thanks to Dwayne. Is that right, Dwayne?
That's right, Dwayne.
Thank you very much, Dwayne.
They called, all these people called, 503-232-8818, or maybe they called toll-free at 1-877-500-5266 and joined the family of community radio, joined the whole solidarity movement of non-commercial community radio.
You know, Dave, I thought I heard some phones ringing. I thought I heard something, but I thought it might just be they're ringing in my ear from all those punk shows I used to go to when I was younger. 503-232-8818. Go ahead and call that number right now.
I want to hear them phones ring one more time. We've got a few more minutes, about 12 more minutes here of Circle A Radio. We can still go further, you know. In the spirit of Emma Goldman, give us a call, 503-232-8818. Make the phones ring. Bring it on. We want to hear from you.
And in the spirit of Pachacuti, raise that little finger up. This is something that only happens twice yearly at KBOO. And Pachacuti, something that happens once every 500 years. The world is rising up. Let's see your sign of solidarity.
Let's see your finger rise up and dial that phone.
503-232-8818.
Which finger?
Any finger you want, because we're not like that here at Circle A. We want you to use your finger, your toes, your nose, any way you want to dial, but just dial those numbers, 503-232-8818, and pledge your support. It's really, really easy. You can pledge $5 a month, which would be $60 for the year. You can do a one-time pledge of $40 or low-income $20. Give us what you got. But we do want you to show your support. Those phones ringing are a lot more than the ringing in Jody's ears from all those punk concerts she's been to. Those phones ringing keep us going in this movement because community media is a large, large part of the movement. I'm sure you listeners know that all over the world, the movement for democratic alternative media is what has kept people like Hugo Chavez in power when the U.S. backed by the CIA, the CIA backed a U.S. coup to take Chavez out. And it was that alternative media that rose up and got him back in, that let the people know what was going on. And we are that arm of the movement in the United States. And you are what keeps us going. So we need you to call 1-877-500-5266 if you're outside the Portland area. Or if you want to do it on the internet, that's a great way to do it, www.kboo.fm.
You know, I couldn't think of a better thing to do with one's money, you know, than give it to KBOO. $7 a month, $5 a month. I bought a vacuum cleaner not long ago. I spent $50 and it broke in 3 months. 503-232-8818. No better thing to do with your money.
And we are not going to break in a few months. In fact, we've been on the air for over 30 years now and hope to be here for a much, much longer time. The powers that be understand the value and the importance of the media. You can see that in their control of the media and here in the United States and around the world. Having an outlet, a non-commercial, independent community outlet like KBOO speaks so loudly for what happens here in Portland, for the amount of information, the type of information that we are able to give to you, our audience, that you can use to help transform your lives and the world around you. Become part of that community of radio by becoming a member. And you become a member by making a financial contribution, as little as $20 for a year, as much as $120 for a year. Whatever you can afford.
As much as $1,200 for a year. Give us what you got.
Exactly.
That's what we're saying. There's a lot of different levels of being able to give out there. And one of the things I'm most inspired by, too, is all the great new volunteers we've got at KBOO. So you can come and you can also learn how to produce radio. And you can follow your passion. You can be part of this international movement, which is, hey, against neoliberalism. It's against the direction that
G.W. Bush, Mr. Danger is taking us. So let's go away from Mr. Danger. Let's move away from the devil into the light. 503-232-8818 1-877-500-5266.
Give us a call. We really want to hear from you this afternoon. I want to send out a big thank you to a couple of restaurants here in Portland that have provided food for all the volunteers here today. Katie O'Brien's restaurant at 2809 Northeast Sandy, Dot's Cafe at 2521 Southeast Clinton, and Subrosa at 2601 Southeast Clinton. They're giving us sustenance to keep us going. Let's wrap it up at Circle A. Great support tonight. Thank you all the people who have called this evening.
The Bolivia Solidarity Network was started about a year ago, and it was started by mainly people from all over the world that have been in Bolivia. So some people have been living there for 12, 15 years, some people had just arrived. But it puts us in a unique position to have people there on the ground living in Bolivian communities, building long-term relationships with Bolivians and the solidarity movement. It's a nice foundation to build off of, to get the direction, the guidance from people in Bolivia, and there is an email list, people sending out information. But we've identified this as a time of our own historic learning and a need to learn from previous solidarity movements what works, what hasn't worked, what has been the mistakes that we've made as, you know, predominantly white movements, for example, that the culture and the race and the class issues often create problems that we'd like to try to avoid, and we'd like to figure out how to overcome them. And so this is a time of historical learning, so we're really welcoming the opportunity to engage with people here in the United States and what is mutual solidarity? What are the real opportunities here? And one of the other things that we are trying to do is to change the model of parachuting into a country for a few weeks and reporting on things or learning about things and then coming back. We hope that people, if they come to Bolivia, will come for a longer period of time. And we've been involved in a project to set up a center outside of Cochabamba called the Center of Dialogue and Intercultural Exchange, Centro de Encuentros y Diálogo Intercultural. And it's a place where we're inviting a global justice-oriented people to come and accompany the social movements and learn by living there and staying there for longer periods of time. So we hope that that will forge a type of solidarity activist or person that has a longer-term commitment to evolving with the Bolivian experience. We acquired an old farmhouse that is mainly inhabited by pigeons. It's falling apart. The wealth of information here around permaculture, around rebuilding, around, you know, green architecture, you know, actual skill sets and constructing this center, but also people who want to share their cultural traditions. Bolivians are fascinated, are very curious about the world, and so this is hopefully a place where people will bring their music, bring their culture, bring their videos, and share with the community that lives there. There's also opportunities. We have workshops on also traditional Andean cultural traditions like weaving and agriculture. In the Andean worldview, land is not just viewed as a place to extract food or resources from. The idea of the garden is, they have a word for it called the chakra, and it's the place where human communities blend with the physical world and spirit and deities to create and sustain dignified life, to nurture life and to grow, you know, food that then sustains life. So there's opportunities to learn from their style of farming and growing food, but there's an opportunity for us to cross-fertilize and cross-pollinate as well some of the wealth of information and skill sets here that people have as well. BoliviaSolidarity.org, and I'll just put out my email. That might be the easiest way to get a hold of the center that I'm discussing. It's Juliet Gaia, G-A-I-A, at yahoo.com. Juliet is spelled J-U-L-I-E-T-T-E, so two T's and an E at the end.
As I said, I volunteer with PCAS, Portland Central America Solidarity Committee, and You can go to our website, which is PCASC.net. You can sign up for the listserv there, and that is a general Latin America solidarity group. So we're trying to do more stuff with Bolivia, but we do lots of stuff with Venezuela, Mexico, Central America. You should check it out.
Por más lejos que me encuentre, ni el recuerdo ni el dolor de mi pueblo y de mi gente. Lo que cambió ayer tendrá que cambiar mañana, así como cambio yo en esta tierra lejana.
In solidarity with the popular movements of Bolivia, the Bolivarian Media Exchange presents a documentary night with two short films about Bolivia. The first documentary, El Gas No Se Vende, is an indie media-produced film that provides an overview of the social conflicts in Bolivia up until 2003. The second, Fuera, is specifically about the disastrous health effects of water privatization in El Alto, Bolivia. There will be food and discussion Thursday, October 5th, food at 7 p.m., movie at 7:30 at Liberty Hall, 311 North Ivy Street.
You can hear Circle A Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM every first and third Wednesday of the month. We welcome your comments and suggestions. You can email those to us at info@circlearadio.org. Good night.